Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call this evening's meeting of the Derry Township Board of Supervisors to order. I would also like to make the public aware of the fact that the board met this evening at two public hearings. At 5:30, a public hearing regarding a proposed amendment to the township's 2015 comprehensive plan, which is necessary for consistency with the township's proposed new zoning ordinance, and then immediately following that, a second public hearing regarding the final draft of the proposed new zoning ordinance. Now, please join me in the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Would you please do the roll call?
Supervisor Engel.
Here.
Supervisor Moyer.
Here.
Supervisor Weir.
Here.
Supervisor Zmuda.
Here.
And Supervisor Corden.
Here.
Five present, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Christman. As a reminder to everyone here, all public sessions of the Township of Derry Board of Supervisors are recorded for the purpose of creating accurate minutes. And we do ask that if you choose to make comments during public comments, either at the beginning or at the end of the meeting, that we ask you to state your name, your address, and to please limit your comments to 3 minutes, just to help facilitate enough time for others to make comments. I look around, there are some folks here I haven't seen in a while, so I will just give you a quick crash course in a system that we devised to help you sort of self-regulate when you get up there. When you make your comments, I'll turn this to green when you start. When you have a minute left, I'll turn it to yellow, which is just a signal to you to kind of try to start wrapping up your comments. And when it turns to red, it means your 3 minutes are up, and we just ask you to wrap up your comments. Again, this is just to make sure we have enough time for everybody to make their comments this evening. With that, I will ask for anyone to please approach the podium. Again, just give us your name, your address, and we'd like to hear what's on your mind this evening. Don't be bashful.
Well, I see the bids came in, but I'm a little concerned in reading the article. Basically, you put out bids, but you didn't include the package you want. It's like buying a car. You sign the agreement, and you go pick up your car, and they say, well, that doesn't include the transmission. So how comes the splash pool and the sliding board, and all those things that were requested, why wasn't that done? Why is it, it's an incomplete bid, so it's not an accurate bid. You're buying a car thinking you're getting a transmission, but the transmission is extra. Now, the way I look at it, this board has defrauded the voters. And for this board to go forward and vote within a week, 3 weeks, prior to the new board taking place, this is why the people voted, they spoke, this is a democracy. And if this board proceeds to go further and pass this, I feel that you are not responsible as board. And I think each and every one of you should be held accountable. Again, you're defrauding a democracy, the voters. I think it was very clear when we voted what we said. We do need a new rec center, but we do not need the Taj Mahal, because those are people like myself paying that bill. And again, the business plan, everybody's saying, it's going to cost us more because you're not going to generate the funds to maintain the place. And I ask again, where is the pool, the organization, the swim teams? I thought they were going to come in and offset the cost of adding the extra pool. Where's their money? I think before any vote's taken, let's get the check signed. Let's keep this thing down. Right now, even with that bid, you're over the $33 million budget. So are you going to proceed to vote on something that has passed the budget? If you do, you're defrauding the people of this community. And I hold you all responsible to make the right decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell.
Pardon?
Oh, no, I just said thank you. Is there anyone else?
Yeah.
I, Sue Myers, 1248 Harding Avenue, Hershey. I'm responding to, I'm following up to a letter that I sent to the supervisors and to the township manager regarding the rally that's going to be coming to Hershey on December the 10th. I would like you to do everything that you can to collect from the Trump campaign the extra money that we taxpayers will be spending for traffic control and security on December the 10th. We're trying to pay for a new community center and pool. We have already been stiffed $20,000 for two previous rallies. I believe that all campaigns which cost taxpayer money should be charged prior to the event with an estimated amount for traffic control and security. Pass an ordinance now.
Thank you, Sue, and I will take this opportunity to address that mostly because I think there are probably a lot of you in the audience who may be asking the same question. When we found out about the rally last Thursday, I believe when we saw it in Penn Live, we started to ask very similar questions and have been paying attention to your emails and concerns from residents. And I think it's really important for everybody to remember that it's our responsibility as a township, first and foremost, to protect our residents and our guests who come in and out of our community. And we have done that over the years, especially as political candidates come in and out of our community. So this is nothing new. This is something that we've been doing for decades, for Presidents Jimmy Carter and Barack Obama, and you name it, George Bush. As they come into town, we have provided police support. However, just because we have done that at no charge doesn't mean that we need to continue to do that. And it is something that, as a board, we do need to evaluate, not just because of the current president coming or because of the upcoming election season, which could bring many candidates to our community. It's something that we do need to evaluate, and we will evaluate that. So I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that we've been thinking it and certainly paying attention to what the community is saying. And as soon as we have an opportunity to develop something regarding that, certainly let everyone know. So, thanks, Sue. Anyone else have any comments?
Jonathan Chris, 226 West Chocolate. Just to keep you in the loop, I have attended three meetings in the past week regarding the proposals for warehouses down in Londonderry Township. The first of those meetings, I'm going to take them out of order, was a week ago today. It was the conditional use hearing before the Board of Supervisors in Londonderry Township. As soon as they closed the conditional use hearing, 10 minutes later, they had a board meeting and passed the approval of the warehouse. It's a $1.2 square foot warehouse, 55 foot high, for the proposed tenant, I believe, is going to be Amazon. For those of you who don't understand what this means to our community, there's only one way in and out of that warehouse, and that's over the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Pennsylvania Turnpike is the same barrier that the railroad track is here in downtown Hershey. There's only limited north-south ways to get over it, and the main way is over the Hummelstown and Hummelstown-Middletown Road. So virtually all the traffic that's going to be coming into that warehouse from the Rutherford intermodal facility there behind Sam's and Walmart, they have the train through, or they bring the tractor trailers down in. It's all coming down the Hummelstown Middletown Road. So they approved that, subject to one condition. They're going to get, if they get sewer from DTMA. The day before, on the 18th, I was at the Planning Commission meeting down in Londonderry Township for the second of one of those warehouses that they're working on, to go on the Lytle Farms property, which is, of course, down at the end of the Hummelstown-Middletown Road. Lytle Farms is 272 acres. 55 of it north of 230 is going to be another warehouse. The other 200 acres below that is going to be houses. Again, all subject to sewer from DTMA. All that traffic is coming up and down the Hummelstown-Middletown Road. Yesterday, I attended the DTMA meeting and attempted to make sure that the people at DTMA understand that they're giving the sewer down there is condemning the people on the Hummelstown Middletown Road to all that traffic. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else care to make comments? Can we do have another public comment session at the end? Good evening, Steve.
Steve Sahn, 450 West Granada Avenue. I just had more of a quick follow-up to something that was discussed 6 months ago, maybe more. It kind of relates to Parks and Rec and so on, but not the community center. So I want to make sure it doesn't get lost in the shuffle while we're continuing to focus a lot of energy on the community center. And that is that there was an assessment of the trails, the bike and walking trails. I'm just curious where that stands. Is there a report? Is it been completed? How is that factored into the budget for next year? And so,
do you mind answering that now? Because it could be a long time until we get to your report.
No problem.
Thanks.
So, yes, we have been working on kind of an audit of the entire John Fidescher Bicycle Pedestrian Trail System. You are correct, it's been a few months. We are basically complete that. Public Works Department just finished up getting a quote for all the signage replacements that were identified in the audit, and we'll be placing that order. Those signs are funded through the Bikes and Beers event that was held with Troves and the Bikes and Beers Foundation, that they've had a couple events that we're going to be purchasing the signs through that funding source. We've also identified a fair amount of physical improvements that need to be done on the trail as well, particularly between Bullfrog and Shank, by the tree roots and some of the moguls that have been created out there with the tree roots. So there's some issues there. We also have, as you can imagine, other areas out in the Palmdale area of the township of the trail that need to be addressed as well. I do plan to get a full report to the board here by the end of the year, so that they have that. Also, before I do that, I want to be making sure that we have the information that was collected in the bike and ped survey that was done too, so that it's more of a comprehensive view, not just our department's overview of the trail as well. So we need to get that information as part of the report and hopefully get that to the board by the end of the year.
I'd ask that be made available somewhere on the township's website or
something. Sure. Yep.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of interested people that use that for a variety of uses, from walking to cycling to etc. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else have any comments to share? All right, hearing none, we'll move on to the adoption of minutes. We have before us approval of the November 6th Board of Supervisors budget meeting minutes, the November 12th Board of Supervisors public hearing at 6 o'clock, the November 12th Board of Supervisors public hearing at 6:10, the November 12th Board of Supervisors public hearing at 6:30, and the November 12th Board of Supervisors meeting minutes. I'd like to ask the board if there are any changes to any of those minutes that anyone has. If not, we can perhaps address them all at the same time. Hearing none, I'll make a motion to approve all of those minutes as listed. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Zmuda. All those in favor?
Aye.
And that motion carries. Next item on the agenda is update on the Gary Township Community Center project.
See if I can move you guys up. Can you hear me okay? Jim? John?
Yeah.
Can I turn Mark's mic on?
I hear you.
If it gets windy
in
here, we really have a problem. So. Okay. Jim Bogret and John Trump from Kimmel Bogret are on the phone, and they'll be joining in this conversation as we move forward. Mr. Crispin, I'll turn it over to you to introduce this item.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As was noted at the beginning of our meeting, bids for the Dairy Township Community Center project went out on October 23rd, and they were due this past November 23rd, and those bids are currently under review at this point.
It is, just to correct, it's November 22nd that they were due.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
November 22nd. Thank you. In the intervening weeks prior to accepting our bids, the township did receive some information from our geotechnical engineer regarding subsurface conditions and foundational systems that I think were important for the board to have a discussion this evening. For that reason, it is before you tonight. So together, we have our construction manager, Greg Cousis, here. We've got Jim Bogret and John Trump on the line as our architect. And certainly, we have our consultants here from ARM this evening. And they have provided a very extensive PowerPoint presentation that's going to be up on the screen. And I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Cousis first to kind of give us an overview of where we are.
Jim and John, if you could mute your phone calls until we call on you, that would be helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
Good evening, Greg.
Good evening. I'm going to give a very brief overview of the bidding results for the community center. As Mr. Christman said, the bids came in last Friday at 2 o'clock. We evaluated those bids. We're still in the process of evaluating those bids. The base bid results that came in on Tuesday with all of the apparent low bidders yielded a low combined bids that totaled $25,617,660. That's approximately $2.3 million under what was budgeted for the construction project, the construction costs for the project. That also equates to approximately $2.3 million in savings over what the original project was anticipated to cost when it was presented to the board in July. So in July, that overall budget projection was at $33,545,000. And right now, without including any of the alternates that were bid with the project, the overall project budget is approximately $31,250,000. There were 11 alternates that were included in the bidding documents. 9 of them were add alternates, 2 of them were deduct alternates. The board is going to need to make decisions as to which of those they choose to accept. If the board were to accept all 11 of those alternates, that would be a total cost addition to the project of $898,150. As Mr. Christman had said, the low bids are being evaluated at this point. We are anticipating being able to report back to the board no later than Monday as to the completeness of all of those bids, and anticipate that on Tuesday, December 3rd, there will be a discussion about alternates to be selected and whether or not the board should choose to make awards and proceed with the contract. As Mr. Christman also indicated, there was some discussion during the bid process about foundation systems, and I'd like to turn it over to ARM at this point for them to be able to make their presentation.
Thank you, Greg. Good evening.
Dave, if you could, just so we have it on the record, could you give us your name, please?
I'm Dave Gassert with the ARM Group. And we have a presentation that should take about 20 minutes, if you can bear with me and ask questions at the end. And I think that'll make it move through a little faster. ARM Group has provided geotechnical engineering services to the township and its design team for the proposed new community center. We've assisted the civil engineer with stormwater and site grading designs, and the architect and structural engineer with foundation designs. As the geotechnical engineer for any new project, we endeavor to ensure that the proposed foundations will adequately address all of the following principles. Promote public safety, health, and welfare. Protect against the structural collapse. Provide for sufficient performance throughout the life of the foundation and structure, and meet the unique needs and requirements of our client. In order to manage these inherent obligations, we must focus on the following engineering concepts. Provide a foundation system that meets or exceeds the building code requirements by supplying sufficient structural capacity. Provide a foundation system that will resist bearing capacity failure. Provide a foundation system that will resist excessive and objectionable settlement. Provide a foundation system that is compatible with local subsurface conditions and geology. Consider the specific structure, its use, and whether its use and unique features influence the foundation considerations and associated risks. Upon incorporation of all of the aforementioned concepts, provide guidance regarding the most appropriate foundation system based on subsurface conditions, type, and intensity of loading from the structure, unique aspects of the facility, and all with respect to cost, performance, and consequences of poor performance. Building code requirements are not optional. Engineers may not and will not knowingly design a foundation system that does not meet or exceed building codes and local ordinances. The structural capacity of foundation elements is typically the responsibility of the structural engineer. However, the structural engineer and geotechnical engineer typically collaborate on various portions of the foundation designs. Sinkhole activity and associated mitigation is not expressly addressed by the building code. Site characterizations. Because the subsurface soil and rock conditions vary from site to site, the geotechnical engineer must characterize the subsurface conditions, including the innate ability of soil and rock to support the proposed structural loading of the building. Some sites are very complex and irregular, especially those within karst geologic settings, and thus it is virtually impossible to determine the precise subsurface conditions or to make descriptions of the subsurface profile at each loading element, even when based on a very large number of test points. In order to characterize the subsurface conditions at the site of the proposed new Derry Township Community Center, ARM provided the following services. A desktop study of the site geologic conditions. Geophysical surveys, including electrical resistivity and multi-channel analysis of surface waves. Standard penetration test borings with rock cores. Cone penetration tests and laboratory tests. ARM has provided our conclusions and guidance regarding the foundations for the proposed new community center in a series of reports. The results of the research, surveys, and tests performed by ARM have been made available to the township, the architect, the architect's engineers, the construction manager, and the bidders. Significant findings of the site characterization that produced challenges to the design and construction include the following. The presence of karst topography. The site is positioned in the karst geologic setting. Karst is defined as a type of topography that is present in areas underlaid by carbonate bedrock, including limestone or dolomite. It is caused by bedrock dissolution, and erosion is characterized by surface depressions, sinkholes, caves, and subsurface drainage. An erratic and pinnacled bedrock surface is also typical of karst. The depth to rock at the new Derry Township Community Center is no exception. The site is related to the Epler Formation of Ordovician Age, or the same formation as is present at Indian Echo Caverns. Sinkholes are characteristic of this formation. Soft and weak soils are present above the rock and may not be suitable to support structural loads without experiencing excessive settlement. In order to tackle the challenges to foundation design and construction, ARM explored and considered several foundation alternatives, which we will explain in more detail. Advantages and disadvantages of each foundation system relative to the proposed construction and site-specific conditions were reviewed. Shallow spread footing foundations. The existing Derry Township Community Center buildings are supported by conventional shallow depth spread footing foundations. It would therefore be reasonable to consider the use of shallow foundations for the new construction. Advantages include simple design concepts, ease of installation and constructability. They have the lowest cost to construct. They have been historically successful for lightly loaded structures. Disadvantages include not all footings can be positioned at shallow depths and will consequently be positioned within or slightly above soft and weak soil zones, resulting in excessive settlement. Conventional spread footings provide little resistance to sinkholes. Sinkhole development beneath, adjacent, or proximal to spread footings often requires remedial construction, including underpinning, and sometimes the building must be vacated during such work. Compaction grouting, the process. The areas of the building to be grouted are targeted based on the site characterization and the structural loading conditions. Primary injection point holes are drilled at predetermined locations. Drilling extends a couple feet into the rock. A steel pipe is inserted into the pre-drilled hole. Low mobility grout is pumped into the ground through pipes and hoses. Grout is pumped in rising stages from rock toward the ground surface. Advantages include the grout can seal off fractures and voids at the soil-rock interface, thereby discouraging sinkhole development. The grout will displace, densify, or compact soft soils between grout injection points, thereby increasing resistance to excessive and objectionable settlement. Compaction grouting has been used in karst areas since the late 1980s and has a proven and successful track record. Disadvantages include the grouting process is typically slow and may involve extended construction schedules. Grouting is typically expensive and the potential for cost overruns is difficult to predict. The grout may not improve shallow soft soil zones. Therefore, other measures may be needed to supplement the compaction grouting program in order to control excessive and objectionable settlement. Aggregate piers, the process. The areas where ground modification and improvements are necessary are identified. Holes are augured to their respective design depths. The auger hole is backfilled with compacted gravel. The process is repeated until groups of aggregate piers are installed. Conventional shallow depth spread footings are installed over the aggregate piers. Advantages include the aggregate columns will displace, densify, or compact soft soils between aggregate piers, thereby increasing resistance to excessive and objectionable settlement. The bearing capacity produced by the composite soil aggregate groups will be increased versus existing pre-construction conditions. The modified soil will resist excessive and objectionable settlement. Cost to install the systems are typically attractive. In the process of installing aggregate piers, there will be an opportunity to detect and address voids that might be encountered directly below proposed foundations. Disadvantages include gravel columns have no internal cohesion and will therefore unravel if a void is present below or beside the column, rendering the column susceptible to damage associated with sinkholes. Gravel has a much higher permeability rate than clay, grout, or concrete, and may therefore potentially transmit surface waters to deeper levels where karst features are present and may inadvertently promote sinkhole development. Once installed, contractors cannot excavate adjacent to the aggregate piers unless additional measures are included and additional work is performed. Drilled pier or caisson foundations, the process. Caissons can be used to support the building framing and floors, but are typically used only to support the framing and load-bearing walls. A medium to large diameter hole, approximately 18 to 54 inches in diameter, is augered to the top of rock level. Tooling is changed and the hole is continued by penetrating the rock until sound rock is encountered below and on all sides of the hole. The hole is protected from cave-ins by steel casing pipe. A reinforcement steel cage is lowered into the hole by a crane. High-strength concrete is poured into the hole to create a structural column. Reinforced concrete pile caps and grade beams are constructed on top of the caissons. Advantages include: caissons are a premium and highly effective system with a long track record of excellent success. Caissons can support very high loads, therefore only one is typically needed below each framing column. Caissons gain support directly from sound bedrock and will not fail as a result of adjacent sinkholes. They will function more like bridge columns. Where caissons are properly installed, there should be no concerns regarding bearing capacity, excessive settlement, or sinkholes. Disadvantages include: it takes time for rigs to penetrate rock, and construction schedules often extend longer than originally anticipated. Caissons are among the most expensive of foundation components. H-pile foundations bearing on rock. Process: H-pile groups can be used to support the building framing and floors, but are typically used only to support the framing and load-bearing walls. A pile driving rig is used to drive H-shaped steel piles until refusal is encountered on the top of the rock. The process is repeated until a group of piles is installed below each framing column. Reinforced concrete pile caps and grade beams are constructed on the top of the piles. Advantages include: H-piles can gain support directly from rock and alleviate concerns regarding bearing capacity and excessive and objectionable settlement. Failure of properly installed pile groups as a result of sinkholes is unlikely. Disadvantages include: H-piles are typically used for bridge foundations with higher loads than buildings and may not represent the most efficient use of materials, resulting in relatively high construction costs. Piles could deflect off of steep rock pinnacles, therefore proper seating on the rock cannot be confirmed. Upon deflecting off of limestone pinnacles, piles may advance in lateral directions and interfere with other foundations or utilities. Pre-drilling of the rock would be necessary to properly seat the piles, which will result in higher cost. The pre-drilled piles will need to be backfilled with concrete or gravel. If gravel is used, a preferential pathway that could potentially transmit surface waters to deeper levels will inadvertently promote sinkhole development. Micropile foundations. The process: micropiles are installed in groups and can be used to support the building framing and floors, but are typically used only to support the framing and load-bearing walls. A small diameter hole is drilled, which typically penetrates about 10 feet of sound rock. The drilled casing remains in the hole to serve as a structural component of the micropile, extending to the top of the bedrock. A steel rebar is inserted into the hole through the casing and extending through the rock. The rebar and steel casing are bonded together with high-strength graft. Reinforced concrete pile caps and grade beams are constructed on top of the micropiles. Advantages include: a highly effective system with a long track record of excellent success. Micropile foundations for buildings typically have lower construction costs than caisson and H-pile foundation systems. Micropile groups can support very high loads and can be installed at faster rates than caissons. Micropiles gain support directly from sound bedrock and are unlikely to fail as a result of sinkholes. Where micropiles are installed, there should be no concerns regarding bearing capacity or excessive settlement, and concerns regarding sinkholes would be greatly diminished. Micropiles typically take longer to install than aggregate piers or rigid inclusions. Construction costs for micropiles are typically greater than the cost of aggregate piers and most rigid inclusions. Rigid inclusions. The process: the areas where ground modification and improvement are necessary are identified. A specialized rig with hollow displacement augers or mandrels is used to create holes to their respective design depths. Upon reaching the design depth, grout or concrete is pumped through the auger or mandrel as it is withdrawn to create a column of grout or concrete approximately 12 to 18 inches in diameter.
Note that some specialty contractor methods are somewhat different and involve aggregate that is ground. A rigid inclusion column is typically terminated a few feet below the base of the proposed concrete foundation. A load transfer platform is constructed between the top of the rigid inclusions and the base of the proposed spread footing. Conventional shallow depth spread footings are installed over the load transfer platform. Advantages include: the rigid inclusions will displace, strengthen, and reinforce the surrounding soil while providing more direct structural support, thereby increasing resistance to excessive and objectionable settlement. The bearing capacity of the composite soil rigid inclusion groups will be increased. The soil modified by the rigid inclusions will resist excessive and objectionable settlement. By virtue of the strengthening and reinforcement of soils directly below the proposed foundations, resistance to soil unraveling associated with sinkholes may be somewhat increased relative to the pre-construction condition. Costs to install systems are typically attractive relative to rock-bearing foundations. During the process of installing rigid inclusion elements, there will be an opportunity to detect and address voids that might be encountered directly below proposed foundations. Disadvantages include: rigid inclusions are a relatively new technology and do not have a long-standing track record of success spanning multiple decades relative to the other systems. A proven track record of resistance to sinkholes has not been established. Resistance to sinkholes is considered less than that of compaction gravity and significantly less than that of rock-bearing foundation systems such as micropiles. Foundation selection. Concepts common to all of these foundations include the following. In the absence of sinkholes, all of the potential foundation systems are technically capable of resisting bearing failures as well as excessive and objectionable settlement. None of the foundation systems reviewed were historically created for the specific purpose of resisting sinkholes. All of the foundation systems reviewed have been installed in karst terrain. Deep foundations or ground modifications are proposed only below foundation elements that will support the building framing and load-bearing walls. Sinkhole risk levels are ranked as shown. Relative construction costs are ranked as shown. The foundation system selection must balance the following factors: safety, performance, and cost. Important considerations. There is a high likelihood of sinkhole activity at this site during construction. This circumstance is common during construction in this and similar geologic settings. Sinkhole activity, when detected during construction, can often be evaluated and remediated with no impacts to the long-term stability of the structure. Post-construction sinkhole activity is also relatively common, particularly within the first year of construction completion. Sinkhole activity can also occur well into the life of the facility due to pipe leakage, breakage, rupture, including stormwater, sewer, and supply pipes. Water supply pipe breakage can trigger rapid and damaging sinkhole activity due to the quality and quantity and pressure of flowing water. The proposed swimming pool facility will have extensive water storage, including plumbing and pumping systems. This concludes our presentation, and we'll be available for questions.
Are they unmuted? Jim and John, can you hear?
I can hear.
Okay, all right, good. Thank you, Dave, for going through that. And that did go much quicker than I think we all thought it was. Yeah, when you presented 44 slides, we were a little worried, but we appreciate you going through that and educating us. At this time, opens up for questions from the board, either of Dave from ARM or from Greg Kousis, or from Jim Gregret, or John Trump from Kimmel Gregret.
Are you going to recommend one of these foundations to us?
ARM has recommended micropiles for the foundation system for the reasons and considerations discussed during the PowerPoint. ARM is not saying that the system selected by the township will not work or that it is destined to fail. We simply recommend another system balancing the factors illustrated on the previous slide.
David, if you could kind of talk a little bit about this project compared to the first project and your recommendations. It sounds like the recommendations really haven't changed. The project has changed. Maybe Greg can help with this.
Yeah, I think maybe the project architect and Greg might be better versed to compare and contrast those.
But you're just from ARM's perspective, your recommendations haven't changed from the first project through this second project. Is that correct?
We've considered all the same alternatives.
Correct. And nothing has, there's no new information between your original report that you issued from the first project and this second project. So you didn't.
There's no new data.
There's no new data, correct. Okay. That's what I wanted to know. Thank you.
Go ahead. Thank you very much for such a thorough presentation. Did you write or were you involved in the preparation of the November 6, 2019 addendum report on the foundation for this project?
I've been involved in ARM's contributions all along, yeah.
Okay, and that report indicated that you've identified and documented subsurface hazard through ARM's continuing involvement as set forth tonight, correct? And looking at, I do have a copy of your original report, and I think you incorporated Appendix A to that original report. But Appendix A to that original report is this map, all these little X's all over. Mm-hmm. And this depicts the area in which this project is located, correct?
Correct.
And these little X's represent surface depressions?
Correct.
Please. And that's consistent with the slide that you put up there. I was looking at your November 6th, 2019 addendum, page 3 in particular. And as part of that report, it says that ARM continues to maintain that a conservative approach to foundation design is the best option for the township, right? Looking under the bullet points, it says that. Is that correct? Did I read that right?
That's our report.
Yeah. And it doesn't say the micropile is an acceptable option, but I think it says it's the best option. Correct? According to your determinations?
Do you have that in front of you? Because I have a copy of you.
No. I recall the report. I think what you're getting at is our opinion regarding the best option?
Correct.
And
for this project?
Yeah, as we said, our statement is we recommended micropiles for the foundation system for the reasons and considerations, all of those listed in our PowerPoint. ARM is not saying that the system selected by the township will or will not work, or that it is destined to fail. We are simply recommending another system, the micropiles, as we balance the factors illustrated on the previous slide.
Dave, you had mentioned when we spoke a few weeks ago that there is no system, and I think you mentioned it tonight, there's no system that's foolproof. There's no way that if we're going to put in X that means we'll never have a sinkhole. Is that correct?
Well, as I've stated, none of the systems will provide direct structural support for the floor system or the base of the pool. They're all supporting the building framing. So it's certainly possible that within the realm of possibilities that a sinkhole could occur underneath a floor slab or certainly in the parking areas or stormwater basins that are kind of common.
And Dave, in your report, the conservative approach that you recommend is that deep rock-bearing micropile foundation system or the pretreatment of the soils with compaction grouting and aggregate pads. Is that Is that accurate? Those were two options we explored and two options we would be comfortable with.
And in fact, that's the system you recommend, right?
But as I said, we discussed the micropiles and we're not... Okay.
You probably need water by this time.
Bill,
Tefuto, ARM Group, TAF-UTO. Just to be unequivocal about it, our recommendation was micropiles.
Okay.
And that hasn't changed. But again, as Dave said, it's not that everything else is unacceptable. It's our recommendation based on all factors considered, and I believe all of our reports have stated that.
And it has been, and I appreciate that. And that recommendation for micropiles, that's made to a reasonable degree of engineering certainty?
One of the situations in this valley, Lebanon, Palmyra, Hershey, as Dave has been describing as karst, and that means sinkhole-related activity. If you get a geotechnical engineer who says that there's some relative degree of certainty, they're being dishonest. The sinkhole activity is extremely difficult to predict. We can't predict it. We do our best to identify the hazards through the various means that we have, including geophysics, CPT, test borings, etc. But in addition to what already exists out there relative to those subsurface hazards, the one slide showed you how the rock is broken up and things move. Once the site gets graded and water starts flowing in different places than it has, sinkholes will occur. And I want to make that clear. Whether you have drilled shafts, caissons, or whatever, the sinkholes will still occur. The reason that we recommend those rock-founded systems, the micropiles in this case, but there's others, there's the caissons, is because if a sinkhole does occur, once a significant part of the structural framing, the columns, etc., are on, the superstructure will not be affected. Okay, so there wouldn't be a collapse or something like that occurs. But a sinkhole can still happen, and what it might affect would be floor slabs, etc. Typically, that doesn't happen because once it's impervious, the sinkhole activity is substantially less. Okay. So, however, in this particular case, and this is why we put those important considerations on the last slide, and it does factor into our recommendation, you have a project of water. You have lots of underground piping. In addition to normal stormwater, etc., you have pumping systems that are flowing all the time for the pool. We've got multiple pools. We've got pumping systems, underground plumbing. So that factors into our recommendation, which, you know, might be, we call it conservative, but when we say conservative, we don't mean overly so. We just mean that there are factors on this project that we have weigh into our selection. Spread footings could work. You know, we might get lucky. Okay? So nothing would ever happen. That occurs, but you guys have traveled the corridor plenty of times. I'm sure you've seen, you know, I've been in this township for over 30 years. You might remember when the water pipe broke in front of the Methodist Church and 422 went down. This is when the old houses were there. And the trolley track was holding up the pavement. And that's an example of hey, everything was fine. Water pipe broke, there's a supply line, and then that water travels. It travels through fractures, and it can affect something 100 feet away. You know, so these are the experiences that we use when we're selecting that. But again, as Dave said, we're not saying that another system won't work. We're not saying that you've made a mistake by asking a specialty contractor to design a specialty system. You know, but it also says in our report, just in case you're going to say, yeah, you're going to ask this, we said, well, we're not the engineer of record for that system. Okay, we're not saying it won't work. We just don't want liability for it. Our interests are always with our client, and we want it to work, and we will do everything that we can to make what you've selected work. But we also want to protect our company and our employees, too, and not take on liability for somebody else's system.
Thank you. I just have two more questions. Looking at the addendum report, I believe it says that a less conservative foundation designs, especially those involving foundations supported by contractor design ground improvement methods, I think you just alluded to that, will not necessarily be the most economical solution over the lifespan of the proposed structure. And I just wanted to confirm that you're referring to those other types of foundations that you talked about
there. In that context, you know, we are talking about aggregate piers or aggregate piers that are modified in some way to give them cohesion. And the reason for that is we don't feel that they're sufficiently tested in a karst environment. So if a sinkhole did occur, and as, I don't know if you guys could visualize what Dave was describing, but if you have something like gravel underground and it loses confinement, it will move. It has to be confined. The modification of that system, which is called rigid inclusions, the intent was that some pozzolanic reaction, some cement, would make it, you'd give it some strength that it wouldn't necessarily fall apart. But again, they're not reinforced. If it lost confinement and there's no steel in there, it doesn't have flexural strength. You know, so it could still buckle. And again, that's could. We're not saying will. We're in the business of predicting bad things, you know. So,
Well, with respect to those alternative foundations, and in particular the foundation that went out to bid, is ARM willing to put its PE stamp on those alternative designs for foundations?
Well, we won't be designing them, so no. The shop drawings that come in from your specialty contractor will have to have PE stamps on those. I think that should be, probably is a requirement of the bid docs. It says, so some other PE will be doing that.
But it won't be us.
It won't be us. However, it may be our duty, depending on what you decide, to review those shop drawings and review the calculations, at least relative to bearing capacity and settlement. And then,
no, thank you for all these explanations. Obviously, your firm's been involved in this since the beginning, both with the original project and the current project, all the way through things going up out to bid in October. So I just wanted to hear again, your recommendation isn't any different with this one-story project that doesn't have a basement. It's the same as the recommendations with the first project. Is that correct?
That's true, but I will say that we actually did not get that redesign to evaluate relative to our recommendations. So some elevations may have changed. It doesn't change the fact that sinkhole activity is still probable. My guess is that loads have changed. I would imagine they must have, except we didn't actually have an assignment until just some weeks ago when we were requested to help with that bid document.
Does anyone else have any questions of Bill? Because I certainly want to get Greg.
No, that was a question I had. David mentioned that there were no changes between the first and second iterations of this, and the second iteration was when deleted the second story and a basement, decreasing the weight of the entire
building. The foundations will definitely change because the loads, I would expect those loads have changed. So when that specialty contractor gets those new column loads, those will be designed based on those loadings. If I'm going to ask the question that I think you want to ask, and that is, had we gotten those new loadings, the new elevations, would we have changed our opinion? Without, you know, I haven't seen them, but probably not. And the reason is what really has been controlling our recommendation is the likelihood of sinkhole activity. The loads, even the old structure themselves, aren't really high loads. They could probably be designed with spread footings that were large with a low bearing pressure. They probably could be, but that has not been controlling our recommendation of micropiles because of the sinkhole activity, the type of structure, and the fact that it's not like the ECC where, as you know, there was sinkhole activity affected that back in 2012. Those are just rooms. Those are offices. They can be moved as they were to Granada. Okay? If something happens to this facility, we don't have pool space. We don't have the facilities, the programs, etc., that this facility supplies. We can't just transplant the customers somewhere. So if something were to occur that needed rehabilitation, you know, you'd be out of business for a while.
Okay. Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
You actually answered one of my other questions. I don't need to get into that now. We'll talk there. I'm sorry, I should turn this on. Are you recommending that we go with the micropiles all over, or is it possible to use a combination of these?
I think it... If we had the luxury,
it's not one spot that's going to sink in the ground.
So, if we were to evaluate the new design, all of the elevations, look at the data points that we have, the discrete data points where CPT and test borings are, it's possible that a combination system would be viable. I don't want to answer that unconditionally, but it's possible. We've done that before. You have to be careful when doing that you don't have, I'll say, in layman's terms, incompatibility with something settles more than another.
Understand.
And you get cracking and whatnot, differential settling. So you have to put the structural engineers and we get that, and it's something that could be dealt with. But it's possible that a combination system could be designed.
So Bill, I've had most of my questions answered, so thanks, it's been really helpful. And Dave, great presentation, very helpful. So just two quick questions. So the comment's been made, it's not as economical. So in other words, the aggregate peers in the long term would not be as economical as the micropile. So how's that measured?
I wouldn't say that's an unequivocal statement.
It's a general
statement. Possible. Okay. I think the term is actually not necessarily
Okay. The
best over the long term, and that's conditioned upon the likelihood of sinkholes and whatnot.
So you know where I'm getting there? So in other words, that's an estimate on your part.
Yep.
Where I'm getting to is that when you're trying to make this decision, you're weighing cost versus risk.
Yep.
And so you're thinking, okay, well, what is the risk? Is a failure cost you $200? Does a failure cost you $1 million? So that's where that comment about economical, I get it, it's an estimation on your part, but that's really the challenge that we have is trying to figure out what makes sense.
Yeah, we understand, and you know, we're not saying that the decision is irresponsible or foolish. Perhaps the money that you save, you know, is put in a fund to address something, and if it's never used, then you've saved that money.
Yeah, it's something that we've, as you know, it's something that's been sort of discussed internally almost an introduction of some self-insurance.
Right.
But, yeah.
Right. You either buy the insurance with the Rock Founded thing, or you self-insure with a fund.
Yeah. But okay. Not to get technical, because I don't think that I'm going to get any closer to fully understand this. But if you use aggregate piers, are there more aggregate piers used than micropiles? So in other words, if you put one micropile or two micropiles that support a certain area of the building, if you went with aggregate piers, are you putting in more aggregate piers? Of course, it kind of like on a one-to-one basis and the only reason I get there is because it goes to sort of what size sinkhole sort of affects the aggregate piers.
Right.
You follow me?
Yeah. And again, once you start talking about where, how big, sinkhole activity, because sinkholes can occur in a very shallow rock. See if we can get this backwards here. There. Okay. So.
I got it.
Yeah. So, when these features are very deep, let's say we had a foundation element that went all the way down to here. Okay. Or, you know, sinkholes can happen in a very shallow location, and they actually happen more often because there's a very small soil mantle, so when it becomes saturated, it washes down into the rock. That's when you guys see sinkholes around here, and there's a depression on it, it's because the soil got washed into the rock. It's not because all of a sudden water dissolved the rock. It's already gone. That happens in geologic time. All of these voids exist. So what is usually the triggers is a water source. So you'll get something that happens on top. You can also, this can also happen just from water table fluctuations. When soil is in a void down here, and there's, whether it's water table, infiltration, a broken pipe, anything, and then the sinkhole starts happening here, and it gradually goes up, and we call it an incipient sinkhole. The things that you don't know, you know, are occurring, and then you have to address. But as far as that aggregate pier, for almost all of these systems that we're talking about, and which is why self-insurance just is not a crazy idea, is you usually get a warning. Some cracking, something might happen. It's not like all of a sudden things get destroyed, except if you have a broken water supply line under a structure. This happened in Allentown several years back. There was a retirement home in Allentown. There was a fire line outside of the building. It was about 50 feet away. It broke. The water traveled through fractures, and it undermined the footings of this five-story building. The columns came down. They had to have a midnight evacuation of all these people because it can happen very quickly if it's a supply line, and then you don't have the running time to address it. Otherwise, you know, these things aren't all of a sudden acutely failing and things come down. But the aggregate piers, that would be a system that would be more rapid to fail because of that aggregate.
Well, I guess I was just trying to limit all the terminology. I meant the aggregate piers with rigid inclusions. Can you give me a sense though? Is there, for every micropile that you would install with the rigid aggregate piers with rigid inclusions, would there be more of those?
There'd actually probably be more micropiles. Micropiles, we typically don't use only one element for a column.
Okay.
There's usually some redundancy. On a wall footer, you know, you'd have multiple piles along a linear element, but on a discrete, you know, foundation element, we usually have at least two. That's generally for some redundancy, and sometimes we need two to support the axial load. Probably not in this case, because I don't think the loads are high enough. But,
okay, good. Thanks.
Don't go too far, just in case we think of something else for you. But, Greg, would you mind coming back up? Because I have a question. I don't know if the rest of the board has a question. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you. Great presentation. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. Greg, could you talk a little bit about the decision to go with the aggregate piers versus the micropiles? How things changed from the first project to the second project,
sure.
and why the decision was made to only put the one out for the bid this time around.
So just a very brief history. In the spring when the project was bid, it was designed with the micropiles as the base bid, compaction grouting, and the aggregate piers with the rigid inclusion as two alternates. in the spring when those prices came in. The base bids were based on the micropile system. The compaction grouting alternate was actually more expensive than the micropiles, and the aggregate piers with the rigid inclusions, which was the second alternate, was about $500,000 in savings. So after the board made a decision to proceed with the redesign layout in July of this year, the team took a look at those two systems, as the micropile system and the aggregate piers with the rigid inclusion, as really the only two systems that were being considered, because the compaction grouting was more expensive than the micropiles, and in the engineer's estimation, an inferior system to it, or a less good system in this application. So there was two options that the project team was looking at as viable options. One had $500,000 worth of savings associated with it. As Bill and Dave have both said, they've been consistent in their reporting that the micropile system, in their estimation, has the least risk, but also has a high cost. So I think the calculation from the design team's perspective and from the owner's perspective is it worth spending more money now to try and reduce the likelihood of sinkhole-related problems later, or do you spend less money now with, since there is no guarantee that you're going to have a problem, the potential is there that there is some sinkhole-related issues down the road, and do you use the money that you're saving as essentially a bank to pay for some of that? The other thing I do want to just reiterate, all of the systems that we're talking about are designed to support the structural elements of the building and not the other components. So again, whichever system is employed, there is still the risk to the township of sinkhole-related activity on the site and impacting the building.
And as everyone said, none of these systems are a magic bullet to protect from sinkholes.
That is correct.
Can I ask a quick question? Like, for instance, when that example that you gave, Bill, with the water pipe, or if a pipe, pipe for the pool leaks, or is it typical that the cause is found and that insurance money covers that? If and when the cause is found. I mean, is that typical? If there is a failure in some other system that causes a sinkhole underneath the foundation after it's built, is it typical that insurance money covers that?
You want to answer?
Yeah. In my unfortunate experience with insurance companies, what I've learned is that unless your policy says something different, it will say that they will pay for structural damage caused by the sinkhole. They do not repair the sinkhole. If a sinkhole occurs and there hasn't been any structural damage yet, but it's imminent, it's up to the owner to repair it. And that, you know, that could be a variety of things like grouting and such. And it could get expensive. And that must be done, obviously, or the insurance company then voids your policy if you don't do it, because yeah, it's imminent. But they would pay for any structural damage that occurs. They hire their own experts to say it's not a sinkhole, and then we'll get into that.
And I'm not so much talking about our insurance, but yeah, for instance, I know with like the ECC, I know that was covered by insurance because it was related to the flood. And the elementary school, I think, was related to a roof drain that was not installed properly.
That was internal roof drain that was routed, I don't know why, through the building. There weren't enough hanger systems on it. It fell down, broke, flooded internally.
Right.
And I don't know what happened with insurance. I just know that there were lawsuits.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
On it.
Okay.
And that was condemned, that area, for quite some time.
Right.
Bill, that's been my experience with insurance companies as well.
Yeah.
Great, thank you, Bill. Greg, could you talk a little bit about this project in comparison to the original project and why the design team, you in particular, and we'll get John and Jim to answer this question as well, felt comfortable with the foundation system that went out to bid, given the changes in the project?
Well, you know, I think as ARM has said, and we've reiterated, it's really a risk tolerance versus first cost analysis that you're trying to do. Some of the differences between this building as it's currently designed and the previous building, obviously no basement, single story, layer loads on all the columns. You know, the heaviest loading on the columns in this current design are approximately half of what they were in the previous design. But as Bill had mentioned, none of the loads are that extremely high. They are just lower now. I think that does not really define whether or not you're going to have a sinkhole or a problem or something that you need to remediate. But from a risk perspective, certainly single-story lower loads reduces, I think, some of the risk to the structure and to the project.
Do you mind, we asked
Jim
and John, or did you want to do a follow-up?
Just go ahead. Follow-up. Greg, do you have a license to supply ARM?
I have not.
And is there anyone on the project team who is a licensed professional engineer other than ARM?
There's multiple licensed engineers that are working for Kimball Program.
Okay. And if any of them
number of different disciplines. From a number of different disciplines, structural, mechanical, electrical, plumbing.
Have any of those engineers weighed in on the foundation system?
I do not recall.
We've got them on the phone, so if you wanted to ask them, you could ask them.
Okay. Jim or John, are you there? Have any professional engineers on your project team been involved in this project? And in particular, the foundation system for this project?
We will say that our structural engineer was part of the conversations with ARM and the whole team. Anytime we talked with ARM, the structural engineer was on the call or in the meeting.
And did that structural engineer issue any reports or anything like that?
Let him finish.
I'm sorry.
Jim, could you repeat the last part of what you said? We couldn't hear you.
I'm saying they were part of all the meetings. So our structural engineer was part of all the meetings. Any dialogue that happened with ARM, our structural engineer was present with everybody, meaning the design team and Greg and ARM. So they would be taking the information and, from ARM in order to, in fact, there's some specific tables. Dave, you might point those out, but that give parameters for design based on the soils so that based on specific loads of the building that the foundations can't be designed.
Did any of those engineers disagree with ARM's conclusions or recommendations?
No, I don't believe that's the case. I don't think they disagree. And it wouldn't, you know, we won't disagree either. We're just trying to find the right balance of performance and cost on the project.
So, Jim, could you or John kind of talk about the foundation system that went out for bid and your comfort level with using it on this project?
John, are you there?
John, are you still there?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, we hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Okay. All right. Still driving, so wasn't sure. Question was,
the foundation system that was designed? Are we comfortable with it?
Yeah, as the architect, I mean, as we've heard from the construction manager, I'm just looking to hear from the two of you or from you, John, on Kimmel Bogret's position and comfort with the, yes, the system.
Yeah, as Jim stated, you know, we work obviously with ARM, with Greg's firm, ourselves, our structural engineer. We all work in tandem with the information that we're provided from ARM, and of course, you know, it's sort of a back and forth with the structural engineer providing loads to ARM, ARM, you know, giving us options for supporting those loads with the soil conditions. So, yeah, we were comfortable with everything that all our engineers had come together on.
Anybody have any questions for Jim, John, Greg, Dave, Bill?
Greg, classified versus non-classified. Could you explain the difference between those two? This project was not.
This bid was bid with the soil being classified.
Okay, could you explain what that means in terms of sinkhole risk?
Well, it really probably has less to do with sinkhole risk than it has to do with rock excavation and unsuitable soils. We asked the contractors to provide unit prices for removal and replacement of unsuitable soils and for removal of rock should be encountered during the excavations.
So the township bears the risk of that rather than the contractor now?
If there are costs associated with rock removal and if there's cost associated with removal of unsuitable soils, the township would pay the contractor based on a verified quantity and a unit price that was provided in the bid documents.
Okay. And just to confirm, we have not received competitive bids for the micropile foundation recommended by ARM, correct?
We did receive pricing in the spring when the project was bid.
The prior?
That is correct.
But not this version of the community center?
That is correct.
Okay. So we don't know what the bid cost of the micropile foundation would have been this time around, is that right?
Not precisely, but the building is very similar in terms of size to the previous project that was bid.
Okay.
And the delta between the two in the spring when it was bid was, as I said, about $500,000. It was $494,000 in savings to use the aggregate piers with the rigid inclusions.
So you think it'd be a comparable price if we wanted to go ahead and incorporate the micropile system, it would probably be an additional $500,000 to what has been bid.
I would expect it would be similar, yeah.
Okay.
And how would that affect the schedule?
I think as Bill and Dave both mentioned, the micropiles would probably take longer to install than the aggregate piers with the rigid inclusions. I don't know if it would have an effect on any of the end dates.
And Greg, the current project as bid does not include splash pad at about $341,000, right?
There, as I mentioned earlier, there's 11 alternates in total that the board needs to make decisions on. The first of those is the splash pad. The second is
sliding board.
The sliding board. Third is for some shade structures. I have them here.
Yeah, I got shade structures, then textured waterproof concrete. And then lightning protection.
Correct.
And then an addressable fire alarm. Is that basically an audible system that if a fire alarm goes off that it would
actually speak instead of just the horns and the strobes going off?
To get out
of
the building.
It's a system that says, please exit the building. Yeah. There was a comment during the review of the documents by the code officials as to whether or not that was required. That's still being something that John and Jim and their team are evaluating, but it was included as an alternate under the scenario that it would be required if we wanted to have a price for it.
And there's other things like connectivity with the high school and library. Those, as we discussed in prior meetings, are not involved in the current bid pricing. Basic pricing, correct.
The walking path and the bridge to the high school and the parking in front of the library are also to add alternates, which the township has the opportunity to add to the project if they should choose.
And the aggregate amount of that's about $898,000.
Correct.
Okay.
If all of those alternates are taken.
Right.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Greg, I can't help thinking that this is the first building that was built on karst soil, and we have a lot of big buildings in Darien Township that were built on karst topography with spread wings. And I think our track record overall is pretty good when you think of large buildings that have damaged DCC. The ARM building had substantial subsidence, which due to a sinkhole a few years ago.
We'll call it the Fred Schaefer building back then.
All right.
I mean, Matt, I think your points, over the point that's been made multiple times is, as an owner, you're balancing how much do you try and invest to mitigate potential future problems. There are none, there's no guarantee that you're going to have a future problem, but there's the potential for it. How much do you invest in trying to mitigate that on the front end versus, you know, trying to realize some savings and potentially deal with the problem later? It is you're dealing with an unknown in that you don't know if there is going to be a problem. You know that there's the potential for it. And so clearly, as the ARM has stated, the option that carries the least risk of impacting the structure is the micropile foundation system. The other systems provide some less level of risk mitigation. There is still some. There is a lot of other buildings in the area with different foundation systems underneath them. Some of them are spread footing, some of them are deep foundation systems. They have different track records.
So I just want to say we've heard a lot of engineering tonight, good engineering, and I've said in many meetings, and I'll say it publicly, that there's no question in my mind that we have the best possible geotechnical firm working on this. There's no question, because your reputation speaks for itself, but also your level of experience with properties right in its direct vicinity. So there's no question that we're getting the best possible engineering place. But ultimately, foundation systems are an owner decision. You guys would agree with that. ARM would agree with that, I'm sure, that you guys give the information, but ultimately, a foundation system, just like anything else, or several other major decisions in a building, ultimately, it's the owner decision. And so, if I may, and I don't want to put you on the spot, Don Santostefano has been part of the design team. I'm going to ask you to come up to the podium, Don. And Don's not just a member of the public, but he's donated his time if you want to give a brief background on your years of experience representing owners.
Yes.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, Don Santostefano.
And you're not done, Greg, by the way. I want to hear from two guys who have been advising owners their whole career, and what your assessment is of this decision.
Those are good questions. Don Santostefano, 525 Hilltop Road here in Darien Township. I'm also, just for full information, the chairman of the Planning Commission here in Darien. I think there's been some really good information presented tonight. And I agree with what you said. Quality firm, very qualified to do what they were doing. Over the course of my career, I've done about $600 million worth of construction. And my role is similar to you folks. I was the owner deciding things on those projects over the years. So it's not easy. And you do have to look at all of the options and make good, quality, informed decisions. I think you folks are doing a good job tonight with your questions. I think, as I looked at all of the information, the risk factor is important, but it's sort of like security. if you ask, can it be done better? Can we have more security? You can always have more. But you don't want to get to the ridiculous level. I think the aggregate columns with rigid inclusions is a good option. Interestingly, in the ARM report of September 30, 2018, they had a little different chart than they did tonight. And they had four levels. And the aggregate columns with rigid inclusions was at the third level, called moderate to low risk level. And the micropile and caisson was very low risk level. So it changed a little bit, but I think it's still essentially at the same level. I think part of this, there was a newspaper article, and I think it kind of puts it out in the public in a way that the general public doesn't have the advantage of what you heard tonight. It was a bit sensational, I think, talking about a damning report. I don't think what these gentlemen did was a damning report. I think they were just reiterating what they had said earlier, going back to their September 30th report. So I think that's unfortunate, because that doesn't let people make good informed decisions as opposed to emotional decisions. One of the things that I found a little curious, they talked about the it not being the lowest, that you shouldn't take the lowest cost. Well, it's not the lowest cost, it's the lower cost system. And that was in their November 6th report. I think they did an excellent job of creating the specification for the latest bid for the aggregate with rigid inclusion. Very good job. One of the important things they did, they said that, first of all, it's a performance spec, which is a very good thing in this case. Secondly, qualified bidders only. And then they named three very high quality firms, nationwide firms, that do this. And they are the only three that could bid on it, unless somebody else came forward who could prove they were also qualified. So in general, I think you have all the information you need to make a good informed decision as the owners. Again, as I've done this over the years, mostly for colleges and universities in my career, you do the best you can with the information you have. And I think you have the right information to make a good decision on this.
So based on your career and your experience, it's not, is it common, you've seen before where an owner may choose a system that is not the specific recommendation of a geotechnical engineer.
Right.
You've seen that, okay.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And Greg, is that something that you've seen as well?
I think, again, I don't want to speak for Aaron, but I think there were multiple systems that they included in the report that all had, that multiple systems had acceptable performance criteria.
Yeah.
Again, I think that their recommendation and approach to recommend the microfiles, again, is based on the risk factors associated with sinkholes, which are unknown.
I mean, I'm not trying to ask leading questions. I'm trying to sort of better understand in public settings, which is at universities. I mean, I'm sure several are private, but I mean, truly, what does happen? I mean, do you see situations where engineers make a recommendation and the owner takes all the information and decides not to does a cost benefit and not to do exactly what the geotech engineer says? I mean, is that something that's common or not really common? I mean, we're a public body. I want to know, this is not being staged at all.
I guess what I was trying to say is I think that the owner was given the opportunity to choose between a number of systems
yeah.
that the engineer had said would work for the building that did, had different risk profiles associated with sinkhole activity.
Yeah.
I think the challenge here is that there isn't a right or wrong answer. It's I think, Don, maybe you said it, we're making decisions based on the information we have from our consultants, you know, from geotechnical engineers to construction managers to architects to planning commission chairs and everybody else who has a vested interest in understanding of this. So there is no right or wrong here.
No, I mean, ultimately, in my opinion, I think you wouldn't be making a bad decision if you go with spin bid the second time. As everyone has said, that doesn't guarantee anything, but almost nothing guarantees that you won't have issues in the future.
Right.
It is a difficult geology in this area. My last college that I worked at was Lebanon Valley College, and I built a couple large buildings there. We've never had any problems. We never used any of these more elaborate foundation systems either. I don't recall ever having this kind of choice at this level of detail for the foundation system. I think as time goes by, geotechnical experts in this area in particular are more and more concerned about sinkholes. Anyone who drives 422 in the Palmyra area, it's finally open again. And it took the state two or three times to get that right. Certainly, this area experiences it. Even in the days that I worked at Milton Hershey School in the mid-90s, we had a horrible sinkhole over on Crest Lane that we never knew the reason for, but it opened up the entire road and shut it down for quite a while. I think you also have the good empirical evidence, and I know ARM mentioned that everything changes when you go and start a construction project, but you do have the good empirical evidence that a 50-year-old building can have any issues. That's a good sign. Really, all around there, except that one water line break, you haven't really had any issues in that on that piece of property. So,
okay. Thanks, Don. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I guess the only other thing is that it would be interesting to know from Bill, from ARM, we talked about that element of self-insurance. It would be interesting to know if we did go with the aggregate piers with rigid inclusions, what a recommended level of reserve would be. So that's maybe something that would need to be discussed as well. So.
This is a good discussion. Thank you, everybody who participated. Anybody else have any other questions? Jim, John, thank you for your patience and your participation this evening as well.
I really believe that this project should not move forward and should be bid to include the deep rock bearing micropile supported system recommended by ARM.
You know, I don't personally, I'm not surprised.
Well,
I mean, I sort of expected that, but in the interest, let's talk about timing. So it's 9:05.
Right.
I'm wondering if we reserve that conversation for December 3rd.
Well, aren't you going to vote on December 3rd?
Well, we're going to talk about it on December 3rd, but then I'm going to talk about the foundation.
But we're going to approve the contract on December 3rd, aren't we?
Well, I'll tell you what, while the two of you are bickering over this, he could probably just finish his
point.
Is this what you were going to
I think it's important to address some of the issues to include the setting up a contingency fund as well and why that simply is a well-reasoned decision. Not one of the people that spoke here tonight is a geotechnical engineer. You have Jim Brogret and John, who said they consulted with geotechnical engineers, and that none of those individuals disagreed with ARM's findings or recommendations. ARM is not only the only geotechnical expert involved in this project. It's uniquely qualified, as Justin said, based upon its particular involvement with the very property on which this project is going to be built.
ARM clearly and unequivocally recommends the MicroPile Foundation system over above the system that's bid. Moreover, ARM's refusal to seal the alternative designs by specialty subcontractors, I think, speaks volumes. I've heard the argument here tonight that nothing has changed on the ground since the last project had been bid, and that's absolutely right. Nothing has changed. The foundation should not have gone out the bid the last time the way it was, and it shouldn't have been bid out the way it was this time, based on the geotechnical facts on the ground. As of tonight, our own geotechnical expert still believes so strongly about the inappropriateness of the current design system that it hasn't sealed the design. And not only that, but ARM has gone so far as to say that if we proceed with the current design system, it wants to be held harmless, defended, and indemnified if the current system foundation fails. I've also heard guarantees or arguments that there's no guarantee that sinkholes won't form, even with the micropiles. And again, while that's true, it's a deeply flawed argument. Using that reason, why have any foundation at all? After all, if there's a risk of sinkholes with micropiles and a risk of sinkholes without any foundation, you could save a boatload of money just by not having any foundation at all. Now, of course, that's an absolutely ridiculous argument. It's about the level of risk, right? I mean, but as elected officials, we have an absolute duty to do what we can to minimize risk. And our own expert, which is uniquely suited based on its experience to render an opinion, has issued a recommendation based on its experience and its experience of this very land. Yet, this board is considering the prospect of rejecting our own expert's recommendation because it's not convenient or because it's less expensive. I'm concerned that this board is essentially saying, well, gee, as an owner, and Justin, you mentioned that sometimes owners reject the recommendations of a geotechnical expert. I'm concerned that by ignoring the recommendation of ARM, we're basically going to say, well, we know better than our own geotechnical expert as to what foundation should be used. I think that type of approach, in the face of this recommendation, if it's not malfeasance, it's pretty darn close to it. I've also heard the proposition that we set up a contingency fee, or a contingency fund, to fund any sort of failure. And again, I don't think that's a well-reasoned decision for a couple of reasons. First, where are we going to get that money? It's not like we have $1 million or $2 million sitting around to put into the fund, even with the type of capital campaign. We still need to run the rest of the township. We still have expenses that need to be funded. And every dollar that would go into that contingency fund is a dollar less that we could use for other projects in the township. It's also a dollar less that we would have to pay down the enormous debt we're undertaking to finance this project, which has already caused us to raise taxes two consecutive times. It's also a dollar less that we know we'll need to pay for the cost to repair and maintain three pools in a fitness center that we want to build. Not to mention being money we won't be able to use for the very important items that we're still missing from this project, which we talked about. And those are items that I think the public justifiably are going to be asking for the next board. Second, we do have an idea of how much we put into that fund, but there is the question of how long do we keep that money in that kind of contingency fund? 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, 7 years? Again, this is money that will be delegated or segregated for the purpose of sinkhole repair that we're not going to be able to use during that time for other projects. I personally think, and I have a proposition, I think the four members of this board ought to personally guarantee to pay for the cost of repair of sinkholes that develop on the project out of your own money.
You four, right? Yeah. Not me.
Now, I know that's not going to happen. It's kind of a facetious argument, but it brings up a good point. And that is, if you're not personally willing to undertake the risk, that I don't think you should be asking the people you're supposed to represent to undertake that very same risk. And I know what you're probably thinking. You're probably saying, Mark, look, we wouldn't make such a guarantee even with a micropile system. And I get that too. But I think that too is a hollow argument because you wouldn't have to. Because by using the micropile system that's recommended by our expert, we'd be doing what our own only geotechnical expert recommends based upon its experience. And so I just have a couple legal questions that are possibly raised. I don't know the answer to these. One is, if we ignore the recommendations of ARM, and we go ahead and build this foundation that does not comport with the recommendations from ARM, are we saying that we're willing to indemnify and hold ARM harmless if a sinkhole needs to be repaired and defended in any lawsuit? Now, given that ARM has insisted that we do that if an alternative foundation is used, the legal question is, will we be precluded from pursuing legal remedies against ARM given the warnings and recommendations this board has received from ARM?
Wait, ARM is insisting that we identify that if we use a different system?
According to the... That was my reading of the report.
I think it might be helpful when you're done to let them respond, because I don't want you to be putting words in their mouth necessarily.
Well, I mean, you could read the report.
Oh, no, we've all read the report.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. And so my reading of this was that it's asking that for... by using this information, that it wants to be defended and indemnified. And I guess, again, John, I don't know the answer to this. Will we be barred based upon comparative negligence or assumption of the risk, given the fact we've already assumed that risk? I don't know.
There's no way I'm going to make any comment with respect to this.
Okay. But it is the issue that I think is a valid issue. So I think this project should be using the deep rock micropile supported foundation recommended by the only geotechnical expert that's here. And I think that project should be rebid to include that in the bid package.
So I just want to make a couple really fast comments. Number one, I think you probably should have suggested that many months ago before we went out to bed. Number two, Mark, you're a friend, but your comments are all typewritten, so they were predetermined before we came here and heard all this testimony, and it's clear that your number one priority is to delay this project. So there's nothing wrong with that, and I respect that, but I think that the intentions need to be clear. That's all that I have.
But you're ignoring the recommendations of our own
I don't want to put words in their mouths, but
when you use the current bid, then you'll be rejecting the recommendation.
No, but I believe you have a preferred system, but you're not discounting the other systems. Is that correct? I don't know if Bill could answer that, or Dave, or Brian, if one of you wants to clarify that again.
Well, it's the same response. We've made a recommendation, and we're not saying that other systems will not work. We made a recommendation, and that's it. You don't even actually know what system you have yet, because all three of those contractors that gentleman listed, you know, we have specified who's qualified, and they may all come up with what they're going to do. They're either going to have an in-house engineer or they're going to hire a third-party engineer to come in and design that system, and then it'll be PE stamped. And they might have different diameters. We don't really know what the structural engineer probably did. I would assume he did. He designed a spread footing based on an allowable bearing pressure that he expects that the specialty foundation will provide. He's made an assumption based on a performance spec. So when you get the submittal, the contractor submittal, it'll be new. It'll have calculations and it'll have diagrams and it'll show us. So you don't actually know you know, what it'll be, but it will be sealed by a PE, registered in PA, and so you'll, at a minimum, you'll have that. And then if you so choose, sometimes the original geotech engineer, us, would review that submittal. Regarding litigation and suing over sinkholes, listen, you can't sue us over sinkholes. It already says that in our terms and conditions, so don't worry about it yet. That sinkholes will occur. What that language was really referring to is when something bad happens, all the schools had something bad happen, okay? Often, not always, but often, there are lawsuits, either by contractors, by owners, by third parties, by somebody. And when that occurs, everybody's enjoined, okay? This has happened to us. And we don't want it to happen to us. And what happens is then we have to notify our insurance company, and magically, the insurance company hires their lawyer, and they somehow, coincidentally, spend the $50,000 of our deductible that comes out of our pocket to prove that we were right. It's happened to us three times. It got thrown out after we spent some tens of thousands. So, yeah, we don't want that to happen. So why we were fairly adamant about our language is someone else is going to design this foundation system. It's not in accordance with our recommendations, not that it won't work. It may be perfectly fine. I'm sure that you'll have a very competent engineer designing that system. They have to be qualified too, and that's fine. But if something happens, we don't want to be involved in that lawsuit, which is why we want to be indemnified and defended, so that we don't have to spend our deductible proving that we have no liability.
So you want to be indemnified, but that's, in other words, we all want to be indemnified.
Yeah, but, yeah, of course.
But that's not, it's an owner decision, right? So,
yeah,
in other words, you're not insisting that you're indemnified. Obviously, you would like to be, but I don't know if you're in a position to insist that you're indemnified.
No, we can't. But our terms and conditions, and that's why I'm not worried about, our terms and conditions that you already signed said has a specific karst. Terms and conditions that say, listen, sinkholes happen.
Yeah.
We can't be sued for that. So I'm not worried about that.
Right.
It's more about specialty contract comes in. We're totally out of the loop.
Yeah.
And then because we have a report in on this project, we get pulled in.
Understood.
That's all. Understood.
And my concern is just that December 3rd is going to come and we're not going to have those drawings. ARM isn't going to have looked at those drawings. I mean, again, I think ARM is uniquely qualified to look at this, and it would sure provide a great deal of additional assurance.
I think no one's debating how qualified they are,
yeah,
for sure. But correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, I believe your firm's been involved in this from the beginning. I mean, you weren't taken out of the equation at any point. You've been a part of the process the whole time, correct?
Correct. The only lapse was the... when the building was redesigned and there was new loads, and I had stated that before, we don't know exactly what the new loads are or where those are elevation-wise. We were asked, would our recommendation change? And I had a somewhat long-winded thing like, I don't know what those loads are, but primarily our recommendations circled around potential for sinkhole reduction.
And I think it's important to say, although maybe it doesn't need to be said, that no one's looking at a lesser cost alternative because it's a lesser cost alternative. No one's putting a price on safety to trade, you know, a higher priced foundation system for a splash pad, for example. We're just trying to make the best decision with the information that we have in front of us.
But isn't that exactly what we're doing? I mean,
no, that's what you said, but I'm saying that's what we're not doing.
But didn't we specifically get away from the micropile system to save money on the project?
No, I mean, Justin does a good job, better job of explaining this, but it's the risk. It's insurance, Mark. I mean, you know, you may choose to take out a a really Cadillac health insurance plan and never need it because you may not get sick that year. Or you may choose to go with lesser insurance and then you have to go out of pocket because something happened to you. So this is no different except it's on a much larger scale and it's a public building, which we all understand the ramifications, right. But it is the risk versus the benefit.
And I understand that. I just think that we owe it to our taxpayers to do what we can by adopting the recommendation, current recommendation, of our geotechnical expert.
That's fair. That's fair. And I think the alternative to that is that if we go up to our taxpayers to make sure that we're making the best financial decision in terms of risk versus cost. So, and to your point, Margaret, that's what it comes down to is, does the owner follow the recommendations exactly, or does the owner collect all the information and then make its own decision? And it's somewhere between.
Right, that's where we are.
And I know this is the most in-depth we've ever talked about this since we started this project. However, this is not new to this board. It's not new to the administration. It's not new to all the consultants that have been working on this project. So we've definitely taken a deeper dive tonight for the importance of educating all of you, all of us. But this is not something that is new to anybody working on this project. It's been discussed since several years ago when we first started. So I think we do too. I'm just going to, first of all, thank you to everybody who participated in this conversation. It was a very good one, from board members to consultants and staff who participated. Thank you. And I'm going to give an invitation to the public. If you are here and this was really all you were here for, we would certainly understand that it is 9:25 and you may want to go home. So if you do need to leave, that is totally fine. Want to go home, Mr. Stang?
I've just asked, and my question would be, could we do the public comment on this topic at this point in time rather than the end, because some people might leave and then not do the public comment part.
Well, I think these next couple of items are pretty quick, so okay. Can you hang on for maybe 15-20 minutes? Okay. But for those of you who...
Excuse me, then if that's the case, if you're not going to have public comments now, can you ask the professionals to stick around until the public comments are made?
Do you gentlemen mind doing that?
That's not a bad idea, but I don't know that we're looking for a dialogue back and forth.
No, I'm not looking for a dialogue. I'm just saying.
Let's do this. If there's a question that you bring up in public comment that we can't answer, we'll take it under advisement and we'll make sure we reach out to them tomorrow for an answer and get back to you. Fair enough? Okay. So if you do need to leave, that's fine. Happy Thanksgiving, and we'll move on with the rest of our agenda. Item B. Item B on the agenda, item B, requesting authorization to advertise an ordinance to amend Chapter 189, Article 4, amusement tax, for the purpose of creating an exemption for 501c3 nonprofit organizations. I know we're going to hear Christmas music. Did everybody hear that? Should I repeat it or are we good? Okay, not the Christmas music. No, Jim's gone, I believe. Jim, you're gone, correct? Yes. God's done calling. So, Mr. Griskin, if you would discuss item B for us.
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. As the board is aware, earlier this year we began a process to evaluate the amusement tax ordinance with respect to the 501c3 nonprofit organizations and the lack of an exemption for those organizations under the current ordinance. The Tax Association Committee has been looking at this in earnest probably since January, and as a result, what's before you tonight is a lot of work and effort to get the ordinance retooled in a way that will allow an exemption to exist for these nonprofit 501c3 organizations. What I'm asking permission tonight from the board is, if you're satisfied and don't have any additional questions to what's in your packet, then we would move to then advertise this ordinance to be adopted at December 17th.
Anyone have any questions?
Yeah,
I
appreciate
the Rick and I have been working on this, I think February maybe, and the Tax Association has been putting a lot of time and effort into this. And Chris, I was getting there. Chris and Wendy Melhorn from the Tax Association. This is really going to be a nice thing for the nonprofits of our community, that the little bit of money that they do make doesn't go to pay amusement tax. So this would exempt any 501c3 in our community from paying the amusement tax, which has very little impact on the township that has a terrific impact on those nonprofits. So I'm really pleased with where the language is. In addition, there were some other minor modifications just to make the ordinance sound a little bit more of this century. So I think I would wholeheartedly support moving forward with putting this advertising it to vote on.
Well, second.
Second by Mr. Moyer. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that motion carries.
Thank you.
Item C, adoption of resolution number 1600 to establish the Board of Supervisors' regular meeting dates at the budget hearing for the year, at the budget hearing, pardon me, for the year 2020. Chris?
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we all are preparing for the end of 2019 and getting ready to open up 2020, before you tonight, as part of our meeting, is a look at the calendar for the Board of Supervisors for next year. I'm asking that if there are any objections to these as proposed, the board approve the resolution this evening. It sets our calendar for next year.
I think it's important to note that staff did check all of the dates to make sure they weren't in conflict with any religious holidays. So we are good for 2020 in my mind.
So moved.
Second.
Second by Mr. Moore. Moved by Mr. Engel. All those in favor?
Aye.
And that motion carries. Next item on the agenda, item D, preliminary final lot add-on and land development plan for the Goddard School of Hershey expansion, plat 1318. Mr. Emmerich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Plat 1318 proposes to further subdivide and develop the land of Dennis Allen Corinne Bird, located along Middletown Road. The property is within the planned Campus West Zoning District and is also subject to the Middletown Road overlay. Lots 1, 2, 3, and 4 is shown on the projected plan, and the residue land were created in 2002. Just a quick evolution of the property there. Turkey Hill was built in 2003, Zimmerman Auto and the car wash was built in 2008, and Goddard was built in 2011. Lot number 4 remains undeveloped. The focus of this plan is the expansion of the Goddard School building and land holdings. To the east. So the existing Goddard School lot ends about the road that you can see going through the purple blue area there. It proposes a 6,081 square foot expansion to the existing 8,655 square foot building, total of 54 vehicular parking spaces, including 3 handicapped accessible spaces are proposed. The applicant will also be providing facilities for 4 bicycles. Property has 2 access points, 1 access point for Middletown Road via a right-in adjacent to the Turkey Hill development, and the other would go between Turkey Hill and Zimmerman Auto, which has a different name, and the car wash in out to Taylor Road. Public water and sewer services the lot in this development. A new sanitary sewer lateral is proposed to service the building expansion. The applicant has indicated that the addition of 50 students would yield about 41 new PM peak hour trips, falling short of our normal standard of 100 peak hour trips for a traffic impact study. The applicant sought waivers of a few items of our ordinance, plan scales for the overall plan in their set to be shown at 1 inch equals 60. Planning Commission and staff recommend the waiver be granted. Also, plan scales as they relate to the profiles. They're actually proposing the profiles of utilities at a larger scale. So, of course, we recommend that those are granted as well. Planning Commission at their meeting on November 5th did make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors to conditionally approve the plan. I am recommending that Plat 1318 be conditionally approved with the following items being addressed: that the applicant reimburse the township by December 26, 2019 for costs incurred in reviewing the plan. If the following items happen by May 26, 2020, that performance security is provided to guarantee the completion of the required improvements and the accompanying agreement to provide financial security is signed. That the plans are revised to show all lot lines on sheet 10. that the plans are revised to show all existing utilities, water lines within 200 feet of the subject parcels, that the existing inlet on a particular sheet, PCSM2, is revised to correct the invert, that the executed legal agreement extinguishing a portion of the current private street right-of-way is provided, that the DEP approval letter for planning exemption is provided, that a CD containing the digital file of the plan is provided, that the required recording language on the deed is provided, and then finally that the stormwater best management practices operation maintenance agreement is recorded concurrently with the plan, and that the legal agreement extinguishing a portion of the current private street right-of-way is also recorded concurrently with the plan.
Anyone have any questions for Mr. Emmerich?
Chuck, quick question. Goddard School was built about 5 years ago.
2011.
At that time, did they have to do a traffic study, or were they under the peak hour trips?
The original portion was also under the peak hour trips.
The two combined, would they have been over?
They would have been close, but I think they would have been just under. They would have been dancing on the edge.
All right.
I believe.
You said 47 additional trips?
41 p.m. peak hour, which is the 41. Highest. Their a.m. peak hour is less than that.
Okay. Thank you.
Any more some questions? Hearing none, do I have a motion to approve the preliminary final lot add-on and land development plan for the Goddard School of the Hershey expansion, subject to compliance with items A through K, as stated by Mr. Emmerich?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Zimuda. I'll second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And that motion carries. Next item on the agenda, the revised final subdivision plan for Crystal A Drive, Plat 1319.
You did not approve the waivers as part of that motion.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
I was trying to be
thank
speedy
you.
And now I was. Thank you. So can, should I just restate the motion then?
If you're just going to include
the waivers as a separate motion.
Okay. Do I have a motion then that the requested waivers from the subdivision and land development ordinance are granted as noted under the explanation section of this agenda item?
So
moved by Mr. Moyer, seconded by Mr. Zimuda. All those in favor?
Aye.
I apologize. That motion carries. Agenda item E, revised final subdivision plan for Crystal A Drive, Plat 1319.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This plan, as it turns out, when they were going to start to create the deeds, they realized that they had some erroneous meets and bounds in the plan. Really, this plan strictly corrects those erroneous meets and bounds, and then also, as a result of the monumentation being set and knowing exactly what monumentation could be set, it also depicts the where concrete monuments couldn't be set, what was set there. As a result of that, they've asked for a waiver with this plan, and that's from setting monuments and markers. In different instances, they either hit pavement and put in PK nails or other suitable substitutions for a concrete monument. But since we now know, the waiver's appropriate. There were a bunch of waivers granted with this other with the plan originally. They're listed in my staff comments. I feel that this is a revised plan and that those waivers take no further action. So therefore, I'm recommending that the, the Dairy Township Planning Commission at their meeting of November 5th also recommended the approval of this plan. I'm recommending approval of 51319, conditioned upon the following items being satisfactorily addressed. Only that the applicant reimburse the township for costs incurred in the review of the plan. I'm also recommending that a waiver be granted from section 185.18, related to the monuments and markers.
Any questions for Chuck? How about I make the entire motion this time? I'll make the motion that the revised final subdivision plan for Crystal A Drive, Plat 1319, is approved, subject to compliance with item A under the Department of Recommendation section of this agenda item. It's also moved that a waiver is granted from section 185.18 of the Subdivision and Land Development Ordinance regarding monuments and markers. Do I have a second to that?
I'll second it.
Seconded by Mr. Weir. All those in favor?
Aye.
And that motion carries. Next item on the agenda, adoption of a decision for conditional use application number 2019-06 regarding 846 Reese Avenue is filed by Oleg Badmayev. Mr. Emmerich.
Thank you. Thank you. As discussed at the public hearing on November 12th, the proposal is to operate a specialty home at this property located at 826 Reese Avenue. The home is located within the Hershey Mixed-Use District and the downtown core overlay. Derry Township Planning Commission, at their meeting of November 5th, was recommending that the conditional use application be granted. I am also recommending that the decision for the conditional use application 2019-06 be adopted, including the conditions A through K listed therein. A through L listed therein.
Questions from Ms. Fairbrook on this one? Not. Do I have a motion to for the decision for the conditional use application number 2019-06 be adopted? Moved by Mr. Zamuda, seconded by Mr. Engel. All those in favor?
Aye.
And that motion carries. Item G, adoption of a decision for conditional use application 2019-07 regarding 1446 East Chocolate Avenue as filed by Oleg Popnev.
Oleg has been busy finding short-term rentals. This was discussed at our public meeting on November 12th, 2019. Property is located at 1446 East Chocolate Avenue. It's located within the Palmdale Mixed Use and East Chocolate Avenue Overlay District, where specialty homes are permitted by conditional use. The Planning Commission, at their meeting on November 5th, recommended that this conditional use application be granted. I, too, am recommending that the conditional use be adopted, as with the other one, including the conditions listed, items A through K in the decision.
Questions? And I'll make a motion to approve as stated by Mr. Emmerich. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Engel. All those in favor?
Aye.
That motion carries. Item H, acceptance of financial security for the stormwater management plan for 1166 Sand Hill. Back to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is for a stormwater plan for a barn being constructed by Kevin Walker. HRG reviewed the cost estimate prepared by the applicant's engineer and is recommending that financial security in the amount of $12,903 is provided. The applicant has provided the security in the form of cash and has entered into the township standard agreement to provide financial security and guarantee completion of improvements required by a stormwater management site plan and report. I'm recommending that the Board of Supervisors accept the cash financial security in the amount of $12,903 and also enters into the agreement between Kevin Walker and the township for the financial security and that the town for the post-construction stormwater management.
Do I have a motion to approve as stated by Mr. Everett?
So moved.
Like everybody. Moved by Mr. Weir, seconded by Mr. Engel. All those in favor?
Aye.
And the motion carries. Last item on the agenda, replacement of performance security instrument for the preliminary final subdivision land development plan for True Hotel Platform 95.
Rather recently, we reduced the amount of security required to be carried by True Hotel to $71,388 for reasons of their own preference. They are moving away from a letter of credit to a cash security amount in amount of $71,388. I'm recommending that the Board of Supervisors accept the cash performance security and authorizes the release of the remaining balance of the letter of credit.
I'll make the motion to approve as stated. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Moyer. All those in favor?
Aye.
And that motion carries. I'll turn to my left for board correspondence. Thank you, Mr. Zamuda.
Yes, I'd like to let the board know that due to transportation, we have set this morning. And as I made a recommendation last board supervisor meeting to somehow get some kind of correspondence out to declare our position on the Middletown Road addition traffic. As there is, unfortunately, very little that we can do as the project is in an adjoining township. DTMA aside. HRG recommended that the letter be addressed to not only PennDOT, but the county commissioners and half. And they will be writing a letter for us expanding the traffic study that was done. The original
this that week or two.
Thank you for doing that, Rick.
I will ask, you know, it's called, you have a study area.
Yeah.
So when they go for the approval for the HOP, a highway occupancy permit, PennDOT looks at a certain area. And ADRG said, you know, the natural thing to do is ask for like you said, to expand that study area. And so to copy unhappy and Santo, the commissioners, and so great recommendation, Rick. And I think John was the best way to do it.
We were both shocked when they said that the study just ended at the township board.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I guess we all assumed it was all encompassing.
Right.
And
right.
It wasn't. So.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Mike.
Yeah, thanks.
Yes, on November 14th, I attended a stormwater meeting organized by DTMA Stormwater Management and Mike Callahan. And it was in the South Londonderry Township building. A lot of the staff here attended. A lot of great interest in stormwater and improving the status of Spring Creek East, which drains 55% of Derry Township. A lot of good coordination, municipalities were there, interested people were there, Chesapeake Bay, Milton Hershey, a lot of property owners, and it looks like we'll be looking at green infrastructure rather than gray infrastructure to bring up our MS4 permit requirements and also reduce the flooding in the Palmdale area.
That's great.
That's great. Nice. Yeah. I have nothing this evening.
Nothing, thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. You say nothing. You sure you don't want to say even? You've been sitting there all this time. Thank you. Dave, anything for the fire department?
Just a quick reminder, we'll be serving our dinner Thanksgiving Day, 11 to 2.
And that, again, is open to the public. Anybody can just show up.
Yes, correct. Okay.
Thank you for doing that. That's nice.
I have nothing. Thank you.
Thank you. Matt, anything from you? Chuck, would you introduce the gentleman to your side? He's been sitting patiently.
David sat here since 5:30 today. David Habig is our new Assistant Director of Community Development. He's a graduate of Hershey High School and soon to be a graduate of Millersville University with a Bachelor of Arts degree focused in geography and concentrating on geospatial applications. He just finished an intern with us. I'd like to call it his job addition. He just really impressed us, and he was an easy choice to fill a long open position.
Good job.
That's great. Welcome.
Good job.
Thank you.
Chuck, did you have anything you want to add this evening?
No.
No. Lauren?
Just to know that the holiday celebration is coming up on December 7th. We're still looking for a few volunteers for that. 2 to 6 next Saturday.
Further, other than to wish everyone a very happy Thanksgiving. So, thank you.
This is apparently your 1-year anniversary with us, so we'll get you out before 10 and celebrate.
My face is not working.
Now we'll move on to approval of accounts payable of $505,288.52 and payroll of $315,947.80. I'll make a motion to approve. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Zaluda. All those in favor?
Aye.
And that motion carries. Now, time for our last section of visitor and public comments. Same rules apply. Just give us your name, your address, and please try to limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. Stang?
Hi, Tom Stang, 76 Almond Drive. Is it Greg? Did you read the biz results?
I did.
Okay. I heard the 25 million number, the 25, 6, whatever it was.
617.
Yeah. But what was the 31,250 number that you said? Was that a 31?
That's the total project budget, including soft costs and contingency.
The budget, not the, okay, that was the budget. Okay, thanks. I didn't know what that is. I kind of heard it and it went by me too quickly. Learned a lot just listening through, and recognize I don't want to ever be a supervisor in this thing. So there were 11 options. I heard Mark read a couple, a sliding board, lightning protection, which
question what lightning protection is and why that would be an option. But anyhow, it just surprises me a little bit that this whole micro pile foundation wasn't another option. So for what that's worth. And my last question might be geared more towards Bill or his team. Bill, you had mentioned some things about the pool and all the water and the lines underneath. Did that type of building with the pool and everything, did that have anything to do with your recommendation of the micro pile versus the aggregate ridge?
Do you have a lot of questions?
That's it.
Okay,
that's my last
fact. Then let's bring him up. Yeah.
The array of underground piping did have a factor in our recommendation. I'm not saying that if it was absent, we would have changed our recommendation, but obviously there's going to be water under pressure underground in the pumping systems pretty much 24/7. So there is, over a normal structure, it has a slightly higher risk because of that underground pipe.
That piping isn't really underground. It's usually at the top of the high pressure, isn't it, Matt? Pumped around the pool, the circulation water.
In the 1963 design that we've been dealing with, yes. But some of the newer designs would be, a lot would be underground. A lot of it encased, actually.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying it's going to leak. I'm just saying that there's you've got pressurized water underground.
So it's encased in a pipe within a pipe.
I mean, it's got the various elbows and connections and stuff. Obviously, these are return. That's why there's jets in the pool.
Good evening, Kevin Ferguson, Hall of One. It was a good discussion tonight, but there's one question that has not been answered, and that is, why are we having this now? This is information that's been recognized that everybody has known, all the supervisors, yourself included, Mr. Moran, so ARM as well, right from the beginning. So why the concern now, after this project has been put out to bid and the bids are back? The ARM report comes in November 6th, after the project was out to bid. If these were legitimate concerns, why now? Why not before this is all done?
I did raise them earlier, and because the bids came in high, it was not an issue.
What, the bids from the first from the first design?
Yeah.
Okay. So that ended, what, last beginning of, last spring, the end of last spring, April 6th, I think, those bad bids came in. So from then till now, I mean, you see how this looks like it's a coordinated political stunt just to stop the project. Because it really makes no sense that we're having this discussion now at all.
Well, we had an updated report issued, which I believe was significantly more adamant than their earlier report.
Well, I mean,
as recently as November 6th.
Okay. So again, if the concern was genuine, I think that both the ARM and yourself would have brought these issues up earlier than this. The bids came back, and they're pretty good bids. They're millions of dollars under budget. The community was without a pool last summer. We're going to be without a pool next summer, and the summer after that. I think it's time to get this project moving. I wanted to also recognize some of the changes that were made to the outdoor pool after looking at the final design. There were some very significant positive changes I think the community will benefit from greatly. The slide, the diving boards, and the lap lanes, I think, will serve the kids especially very well. And I firmly believe when these doors finally open up, everybody in the town, all the kids, all the parents will be very grateful that they have a place to take their kids to get some exercise, burn off some steam, hang out with friends during those long winter months, because right now there's nowhere to do it. So, you know, any further delay at this point, it's going to cost more money, and I think it just hurts the community at this point. I mean, legitimate concerns, but you have to question the timing in the report, and you're, okay? So I just wanted to express that. All right, thanks for your time, and have a good Thanksgiving.
Thanks, Kevin. It's worth noting, I don't know if it was talked about, Greg, but you mentioned that there's, it'll be closed one more summer, so closed this summer, right? And then there was an alternate for, and it was only $10,000.
I did not go into detail on that. That is one of the alternates that was priced with the project, was the premium cost to open the outdoor pool and the locker room area for the summer of 2021.
Right.
And so that's something that the board will have to decide if they want to act on. But there was pricing from a number of the prime contractors that were associated with that alternate, and that's in the summary that was provided to you. So if that was something that the board decided to pursue, then certainly that outdoor pool could be open in the spring of 2021.
It was a nominal cost, correct?
$15,000-$20,000. I have it right here.
That's pretty important.
So
any further delay?
Open it.
Two full years.
$19,150.
Good evening, Wayne Rivers, 815 Cypress Court. I wasn't going to say this until the gentleman before me got up and started talking about legitimate concerns. I haven't heard anybody talk about public safety, all right? It's all been about cost, risk. What do you do if you go with a foundation that isn't applicable to the foundation? The foundation doesn't match what the arm is saying, and something happens, you know? I don't want anything happening to my kids. I don't want anything happening to your kids or your nephews, nieces, and whatever. Nobody's talking about that.
We did talk about that.
Like, okay, but
very important that we talk about that.
Okay,
yeah.
But the thing is I keep hearing risk, okay? Let's talk about the public safety, and instead of putting money aside to fix this, Or what's it going to cost to repair? Do we do it now? Do we do it down the road? Something that needs to be considered. To me, this is like a ready, fire, aim situation. This discussion should have been taking place back in June or July again. To put a presentation up here, which was very well done, it gave you all the pros and the cons, should have been done a long time ago so that you're not having this discussion now. The other thing that I think that the public needs to know is this thing did not come in under budget, okay? It was approved at $33.5 million. It came in at 25.6. You're going to have $4 million in soft startup costs. We've already spent $2.1 million on the previous plan, expenditures up until now, that were wasted, if that's what you want to call it. You're going to have at least 5%. $1.3 million or more in cost overruns. And I guarantee you, you're going to have it. I have a relative that used to work for Gannett Fleming, one of the largest engineering firms in the area. Made friends there. I talked to them in the past few months. They told me that if they would have had a project that was one-tenth, I mean, they had projects 10 times larger than this, if they would have had any of the questions that are coming back that they do now, on this past bid, they would have retracted their bid and redid it because of all the questions that were there, a lot of the PE seals that weren't done. There's just too many questions about what's going on. And I appreciate Don getting up here and giving his perspective. Why don't we get another member of the public to come up here and give their perspective? It's just fair enough. Again, cost is going to be over $33.5 million. And I think you really need to consider a different foundation. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's hard not to respond.
I know.
Just the total cost was 31.3, or what was it, with the 5% contingency. I don't know where you're coming up with 33.
It's easy. 25.6, add 4, 29.6. add two for the money that's already been spent.
That's included.
It's already in there.
Okay.
You just can't throw around wrong numbers.
Justin, how is it included in the bid?
Okay. Let's
say, you know how
let's
talk to Greg
later,
at.
Okay? Linda, you're up.
Linda Iyer, 2321 Raleigh Road. Additional costs. Purchasing a fitness partner and outfitting the fitness. That has not been mentioned in public at all by this board except a letter of intent that was tabled. That's another piece of it. Also, I have not heard any embracing by this board of the business plan. SFM presented a plan and no one's ever really owned it. You know, it's not a Dairy Township plan. It was a plan made by some people down in Florida. I just feel you rushed this to get it in before the end of the year. And shame on you.
Anyone else?
Steve Seidel, 450 West Granada Avenue. So a couple thoughts. So I don't know where we stand with permits, but I would hope that this board would not award a construction contract unless all permits are in hand. Dealt with many large-scale construction projects over my career. I am a professional engineer. I've managed many projects from small, a couple $100,000 projects to tens of billions of dollars like this project is, and certainly would not award and proceed with an award of a contract if permits are pending. Permits can get tied up for a long time, and certainly, especially on a public project, you can end up with a lot of time delays, delay claims from the contractor due to the project having a delayed start, or at least portions of the project being delayed. So I don't know the status of the permits, but I'm just asking this board, when you make your decision in the next meeting or two, whenever you do make that, that you do consider the status of the permits. Secondly, as a professional engineer, I am not a geotechnical engineer. I'm not going to weigh in on that, but I certainly would not. ARM is a top-notch firm. I certainly wouldn't discard or discount their judgment and their recommendation. I am a little surprised. I guess I assume that both of the foundation options that were in the original bid, I guess I assumed that those would also be options. If not in the base bid, then it would be an alternative. $500,000, well, don't throw money around lightly, $500,000 on a $25, $30 million project to have a more secure and safe foundation, to me, frankly, is makes good sense. The word foundation is used not just in engineering and in construction, but the word foundation is used in all sorts of areas of enterprise because it is so important and everything else supports off of it. So, in the field of engineering, I certainly have a lot of respect and put a lot of credence in what structural engineers tell me and what geotechnical engineers tell me. I've had training in both of those as part of my engineering education. I don't have the experience in those areas in practice, so I would not make those kinds of decisions. Even as a professional engineer, I would look to those experts. I'd question those experts, as you've done tonight, which is great, but I would look to those experts for their best experience. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else have any comments this evening? It's going to be close to the 10 o'clock hour.
Dennis Trout, 2010 Locust Lane. First of all, I'd like to thank
Mr. Zamuda and the board for the recommendations of the letters to PennDOT and the other townships. Middletown Road is a problem, will continue to be a problem, and as a retired professional engineer, previous strategic planner both in the military and for federal government, I'm concerned with haste making waste. I've repeated some of these concerns before. Mr. Ferguson seems to think that most of them are, from what I discern, has admitted the fact that there are other facilities available to the majority of Derry Township. Not everybody in Derry Township lives closest to the planned Hershey Community Center. We've got Middletown, Hummelstown, Palmyra, and Harrisburg have pools available. No child is going to be deprived by a delay. I think people on this board have made recommendations. Mr. Moyer has cautioned as to the micropile issue. I'm concerned in that this is going back to February of 2016, where two previous communities turned down such a Taj Mahal facility. And it was postulated then that this wasn't going to cost the taxpayers anything because of the community. This is a great community, but it doesn't have unlimited resources. We have used the words need instead of want. There are true needs. We do want a community center, but three pools and the mechanism that this board went through with regard to allowing the pool enthusiasts to go for the most expensive competitive pool and then say, nobody's going to be happy, and then you choose one, the highest of the four options available. We've got three pools now proposed, which would increase, in my mind, the probability of adverse effects to sinkholes. And with regard to comments I've made previously, I would recommend that this board and the township make available the written comments that are made, not just have recordings of those of us that attend these meetings or have the opportunity to attend these meetings, to have their voices heard because they're recorded, but you have received many written in greater details, including those I made on the order of a year ago, as to the problems of a swimming hole ending up in a sinkhole. With that, I appreciate what you've gone through, but given that the fact that two other communities have turned this down, and what is the urgency of a delay to get the correct information and sign off, as other people have pointed, the plans and approve something that is going to be a problem. Thank you.
Yes. Anybody else have any comments for this evening? Hearing none?
Where is the magic over the cliff when we add up all the dollars that it shuts down? I'm hearing $33.5 million. He's saying 26.5. Yeah, there was 4 million here, 2 million there. You know, that all adds up. You know, my understanding of this bid is only a partial bid. It's not a complete bid of what, like Mark identified, different things missing. He had 20,000 here, 15,000 there, $500,000 here. That all adds up. Somebody got to pay that bill. And the thing, and Wayne brought up about the safety. How would you like to wake up some morning and see in the newspaper that one child was killed at the Hershey Rec Center when a sinkhole opened up and swallowed him and her and took a quarter of the building down? That was a possibility at the Early Learning Center. Thank God there was no kids in that school when that opened up. So keep that in mind. So safety should be the factor, not the cost, which is cheaper. But again, as I said earlier, I think if this moves forward without, again, a democracy and without defrauding the voters, I think this board, being a lame duck board at this point, wait till the new board comes in, take a better look at it, look at all the nicks and crannies of the thing, and make sure we don't make the mistake the third time. It appears we're heading in that direction right now. You know, Justin, you say, oh, he has his typed reports all in front of him. You know, he has a little thicker. Well, you're pulling people out of the audience to support your cause. So when you call on me, I'll talk to him.
Because I know you'd stand up anyway.
The bottom line is, you know, you're accusing him of rewriting the scripting, and you have a guy brought in and so you can call him up.
So it's be honest, Mark and I do it all the time.
Well, it's kind of like the impeachment hearings, you know. Hey,
Thank you, Mr.
Okay. Anyway, like I said, the safety is a concern. The cost is a concern. And to be bickering over this and that on December 3rd, really, what does it matter if it's March 3rd?
Well, thank you, Mr. Campbell, for your comments. I'm going to ask you to take a seat so we can wrap up.
Okay.
Appreciate your
What's
thoughts.
Answer that question. What's the difference between March 3rd?
Well, the difference, I'll just conclude by answering your question.
Yeah.
This board needs to make a decision at some point. This project has been worked on since 2014. And if it's not December 3rd, and it's not March 3rd, and it's not May 3rd, there'll always be some question. And at some point, this board is tasked with making a decision. And we're going to have to make that decision based on the best information that we have. And this board and the staff and all the consultants work on this project every single day and have been for years. And I can tell you that the public safety and welfare are first and foremost, and there is no price on safety of anything we do, especially with this community center. So please trust in that Mr. Gamble, I'm sorry, I'd like to finish the meeting.
I just want to correct you.
You're going to correct me.
This board, it's the Terry Township board. Doesn't mean you.
No, I don't. I don't mean these five people. I mean the previous boards. The new boards that the Derry Township supervisors have to make a decision on this and many other things, and sometimes it's hard to know when the right time is to make a decision, but ultimately a decision must be made. So with that, I would like to thank all of you for coming this evening, and I think as we get into the Thanksgiving season, we should all be thankful that we live in this wonderful community and we can come here and talk and debate and try to understand each other's perspectives. So I thank you for that. And I make a motion to adjourn this evening's meeting, seconded by Mr. Samuda. All those in favor?
Aye.
And that motion carries.